You're listening to a Cripple and Co. production.
This episode of Disability After Dark has been brought to you by Come As You Are. Come As You Are is Canada's only worker-owned co-op sex shop. Trans-owned and operated, Come As You Are carefully reviews and curates their selection of sex toys, books, and DVDs. Now you can get 15% off your next purchase at comeasyouare.com using coupon code AFTERDARK. This episode of Disability After Dark has been brought to you by clonawilly.com. Clonawilly and Clonapussy are do-it-yourself molding kits that allow anyone to make an exact replica of any penis or vulva into a sex toy at home. So if you go to clonawilly.com and you use the code Andrew Gerza, so just spell my whole name, at checkout you can get the Clonawilly or Clonapussy kit and anything else site-wide at 20% off. Wow, this is a deal that cannot be cloned. I have been in contact with my friend Victoria over there, and they're so friendly, they're so kind, they really want to make sure that if you want to create your own Clonawilly or Clonapussy molding kit of your own body, they want to make it accessible for you, they want to listen to your questions, they want to help you where they can. So if this is something you're interested in, please head over to clonawilly.com and use my promo code Andrew Gerza right now to get 20% off site-wide. Thanks again to Clonawilly for sponsoring this episode. Content warning. The language, content, and discussion found within this episode of Disability After Dark will be explicit. Listener discretion advised.
This is a podcast that looks at disability stories. It's like sitting down with a really close friend to have a real conversation about disability, sexuality, and everything else about the disability experience that we don't talk about. The things about being disabled, we keep in the dark. Here is your deliciously disabled host, disability awareness consultant, Andrew Gerza.
Hey there, friends. Just a brief disclaimer. At the top of the episode, I say there's a video version of the podcast, and rest assured, there totally still is. But when I tried to upload the video to Instagram Reels, like I say in the podcast, Instagram Reels was like, no, you don't get to upload that. So this means that I had to figure out another way to do it. So the wonderful co-creators of the Ride Ahead film agreed to host a video on their YouTube channel, which I will link to you in the show notes. So instead of going to my Instagram Reels, go to the YouTube link I have in the show notes to watch the video version. But now, here's the show. Okay, bye. Hello, hello, friends. Welcome to the show, friends. And thank you so much for clicking on this bonus episode of Disability After Dark, the podcast shining a bright light on disability stories. I am your deliciously disabled daddy host, Andrew Gerza. Let us get comfy, cozy, and crippled and get today started, shall we? First things first, if you're watching this on my Andrew Gerza 6 Instagram and on the Instagram Reels today, and you're like, wow, I've never seen Andrew do a video podcast before. Well, this was so special today that I had to try video. And normally I can't edit video, but my lovely guest today offered to help me do that. So that is why I'm doing it in video. And I'm so excited to share with you who I get to talk to today. So let's get right to it. I am meeting today my new friend, Samuel Habib, and his dad, Dan Habib, because they have just created this amazing new documentary called The Ride Ahead, which is all about Samuel Habib, who lives with multiple disabilities. It's all about his journey to adulthood and his journey to transition to being an adult, because no one tells you how to be disabled, and especially no one tells you how to be a disabled adult. And I am so excited about this film. The film is screening in Toronto on April 28th at, wait, let me pull up the proper dates here. Let me get it right. Hang on. It is screening at TIFF on Sunday, April 28th at 2:30 p.m. and on Tuesday, April 30th at 1:45 p.m. And I will be at one of those screenings. I'm pretty sure Tuesday, April 30th is the one that I'm going to. I'm so excited. This film is so fantastic. It follows Samuel as he navigates the path to adulthood, reaching out to disability activists along the way for their wisdom. He interviews so many amazing people, including the late, great, incomparable Judy Heumann. This film is so important. The film aims to transform awareness, promote understanding of ableism, and produce lasting and meaningful cultural change for young adults with disabilities. And in our interview, Samuel and his dad talk about all those things, his experience of adulthood, you know, transitioning to an adult, what he wants as an adult with disabilities, some of the things that he faces in trying to be an adult with disabilities, the ableism he experiences. We talk about so much here, and I am so excited for this film. If you are in Toronto and you want to come, please come. You can, there's a promo code that I will put in the show notes. And if you're watching this right now, go to Disability After Dark, this bonus episode, and you'll see the promo code in the show notes. I'll make sure that it's there. And it's valid for two tickets at 20% off. This is a film that's going to change the narrative for disabled folks and for young disabled folks especially. And I'm so honored and excited to be able to see the film on Tuesday and to have been able to talk to such a young, brilliant, disabled mind about this film they've made, Samuel Habib. I loved also talking with his dad, Dan, about his experience being the parent of a disabled person as they go on this journey together. So many important things happened in this interview, and I'm so excited for you to listen to it. So enough of my rambling, but right now, here's my interview with the creators of the new film, Ride Ahead, Samuel and Dan Habib, right here on Disability After Dark. Samuel and Dan Habib, hello.
Hey, nice to see you, Andrew.
Hey, good to have you both here. I'm so excited to have you here. I feel like I'm talking to two celebrities because the trailer for your thing just dropped on The Hollywood Reporter. Wow, amazing. I am so excited to learn all about your new film, The Ride Ahead, and I'm going to be at the Toronto premiere, so that's really cool. I am just so excited to have you here. For anybody listening who doesn't know who you folks are, can you give us a quick introduction of yourselves, who you are and what you do?
Yeah. Samuel, you want to go first and then I'll jump in?
Hi, everyone. My name is Samuel Habib. My pronouns are he and him. I am the co-director of our new film, which is titled The Ride Ahead. I work part-time at the Westchester Institute for Human Development as a multimedia production assistant and presenter. I'm also a college student. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to have you. I'm so excited you're here.
Andrew, thank you for having us. We're fans of your podcast, so it really is exciting to be with you today. So I'm Dan Habib. My pronouns are also he, him. We're here in Concord, New Hampshire, and I'm a filmmaker and a former photojournalist. And for the last 20 years, I've been doing documentary films about disability issues. And the last couple of films I've done, like The Ride Ahead and My Disability Roadmap, I've co-directed with Samuel. And I direct a project at the Westchester Institute for Human Development called the Inclusive Communities Project. And our film company is called Like Right Now Films. So that's just a little bit about me and Samuel.
I mean, I love what you're doing. And, you know, I was telling you off air, Dan, that I found you from my library's website when you did your very first thing about Samuel, and it was called Including Samuel, right?
Yeah.
And I found you because I was looking for content for the show, and it just popped up in my feed, and I was like, all right, I'll review this. Great. And so, like, for me, it was like a really roundabout like thing to be like, wow, I'm talking to the actual people that I watched that film about. That's so cool.
Yeah, and this is so, and it's kind of cool because this whole new film is like a full circle moment for us, because we started Samuel Wright when you were small and you were just a little kid, and now you are a grown ass man. and we're doing films together. So he was quite the little guy when we did Including Samuel. This is a whole nother thing.
I remember. So I feel like I'm like, this for me is like, wow. So man, I'm so excited you're both here, and I can't wait to jump in. So let's jump right in. Let me get the right questions up. Here we go. Okay. So Samuel, I want to ask you, how do you feel about being a person with a disability?
I don't mind having a disability. The only thing I don't like about having a disability is all of the medical stuff, like blood draws. And that sometimes people talk to me like I'm a 3-year-old. And my genetic disorder has made it more difficult to drive my chair by myself and use my communication device. But I'm proud to be a part of the disability community, and I have an awesome team of support people every day.
First of all, I couldn't agree more with, I love being disabled, and I call myself severely disabled, and it's a point of pride for me. And I definitely understand about, you know, wanting to and feeling like you're being talked down to. I'm going to be 40 next week as we're recording this, and I still go out in the world and constantly am talked to like I'm 4 or 5 years old. And it's like, no, I'm a grown person. Like, I do stuff. It's all right. So I understand completely the feeling of not having that autonomy. And that's why I think this film is so important and valuable, because from what I've seen, just in the trailer, seeing you navigate the world around you as somebody with CP, it's just, for me, as somebody with also with CP, it's such a important thing to see on screen. And I'm so, so excited for that.
Hey, can I ask you, Andrew, what do you say to people when they talk down to you? I think Samuel might be interested. He's always interested to know how other people deal with those awkward, awful moments.
I try to see, you know, it's funny because I try to see what I can get out of it. If they're talking down to me, but they're going to give me like $5 off an order or something, or they're going to like give me something by letting them talk down to me, then I'll use it to my advantage. Like, I have no problem playing that card. I think that, you know, when I was Samuel's age, 24, I would have been much more angry about people talking down to me because I want my own identity. And so now that I'm a little bit older, I've softened only because I don't have the energy to care really anymore. I'm just like, all right, well, you weren't trying to hurt me, so okay. Like, I'll go with it, but like, it doesn't feel good, but it's just, it's not worth my energy.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
The next question I have for you, what I think is so important that we talk about, Samuel, what are the greatest obstacles for you in your transition to adulthood?
The biggest challenge for me has been getting into the homes of my friends and family members. Sometimes, I also get too tired to stay up late, so I miss out on going to bars, parties, and dates at night. These days, I'd say the biggest challenge is dating.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. I find dating at 40 with a disability, with a severe disability in my case, it's impossible. It's really hard because just like what you speak about, being tired, not being able to go out. Also, as I'm sure you know, like, I have care around me all the time. So I have to manage, and I'm sure you do as well, I have to manage my disability support worker around what times they can do. And I feel, and I felt when I was your age, like the time was never really mine. It was never really mine to decide, oh, it's 12 a.m. I want to go to this bar. I want to do this thing. You can't do that because you have care attached to it. So and in terms of dating, like, that's how people go date. They go out to bars late at night, and they go to clubs late at night. And so I definitely understand the challenge there. It's definitely not easy. I also think, you know, for me, when speaking about adulthood, I'm 40 now, and which, again, feels really weird to say, but I feel sometimes like I'm 17, 18, 22, sometimes 13, 14, because we don't have enough discussions with people with CP, especially about what's your life going to look when you're 40, 50, 60? What is your experience going to be? So I definitely understand the desire to want to transition fast. But then what you realize is that there's not a lot of resources for you once you make that transition.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Something we try to do in the film is talk, like in both in showing Samuel's life in really honest ways, we sometimes also try and show people what are the underlying supports that make this possible, right? Whether it's like housing supports or right, Sam, exactly, or like funding for the direct support professionals that are so amazing that work with him, all those things. People need to know this is not, doesn't just fall into place.
No,
like thoughtful systems behind it.
And it's a whole, I mean, in America with Medicaid and Medicare and all those things, like where I'm in Canada, so it's not the same system, but it's still a system that is, in both cases, vastly broken and vastly underfunded. And so thinking of adulthood, it's really hard because you have to go through so many hoops. So like the fact that, Samuel, you're living on your own in your own place, like that's sadly, it's more unheard of than I think we recognize. And I think it's great. And I'm so glad you have the resources to do that because it's a rarity, unfortunately. And so,
yeah.
And so that's why, that's why I think that what you're doing and by showcasing this is so valuable.
Yeah, and I'll just add that I don't know if your viewers, any of your viewers watch this on video versus audio, but Samuel's favorite part of the house is right behind him with a big ass TV screen mounted on the wall.
It's not a video podcast, but I saw that and I was like, I'm jealous of that TV, man. Wow. But this, I'm so excited that you're here. This is a question that I'm excited for, and I think will garner a lot of discussion. I remember when I was in high school, 14, 15, 16, 17, I didn't know what resources were available to me. I didn't know what I was going to do. I knew I was going to go to college, but I remember, and I'll share this story with you because I think it'll resonate with both of you. When I was thinking about going off to college, I went to my guidance counselor in high school and I said, oh, I want to go to this college just north of like a couple hours away. And she went, why would you want to do that? And I went, well, everyone else is doing it. I want to go into school too. And she goes, but you can't work. Why would you? And I just remember thinking, wow, there's no, like I got into the school and I was lucky enough to go away, but there was no resources for me and there was no belief that I could. So that I'm wondering for you, Samuel, how difficult was it for you to adjust to a routine after high school?
It was not difficult to adjust to a new routine after high school. I like my routine now better. I like going to college at NHTI because my professors are great and the students are friendly and kind. My job is going really well. I like meeting all the mentors and traveling with my dad. I'm more relaxed now because of my brain surgery. And also high school was kind of wild. My nervous system got pretty amped up by my friends and all the girls.
Well, as it should have done, I didn't know there was a brain surgery involved in all of this. Like that's a big deal.
Yeah, I was going to, and I think Samuel could probably tell you a little more about his disability, but I was going to ask him, there's some breaking news on the job front for Samuel. In addition to his film work job, Samuel just... you want to share, Samuel, your new job you just got?
It was not difficult to adjust to a new routine after high school. I just got a job at Bank of New Hampshire Pavilion for the summer. I am excited to see the broad array of shows.
Oh, amazing. So is that like a playhouse?
Is it like a concert venue, Samuel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. And
one of the things, Andrew, that we're trying to do with this film, girls, yes, Sam was trying to, hoping that it might lead to some interactions.
So. Well, I'm sure it will. I mean, also Samuel's, you know, a star now.
What, Samuel? Go ahead. Were you saying something?
Yeah.
Go ahead. And a date, did you say?
Yeah,
hoping to start dating. It's been a challenging thing to come around. Breakthroughs on, which I think we're going to talk more about later. And Sam, well, I was thinking, you know, one of the things that we're hoping with this film is we can also raise visibility for a very rare disorder that Samuel experiences, because that's part of what we can do with a film is like raise visibility and awareness. So I don't know, Samuel, if you want to just explain your underlying disability so people have that understanding. Go ahead.
I have GNAO1 neurodevelopmental genetic disorder. I found out through genetic testing in March 2019. GNAO1 is caused by a mutation in a protein coding gene. It caused my cerebral palsy, epilepsy, and speech disorder. There are only about 300 people in the world that have been diagnosed with this disorder.
Yeah, we can, maybe you can share with your viewers, if you share any links, there's a great foundation called the Beau Foundation that talks about all this, that raises visibility for this specific disorder.
I'll make sure that that's in the show notes for sure. Also, you know, it's funny that we talk about genetics, because I remember reading a few weeks ago that CP was starting to be looked at as a genetic disorder. And, you know, we've been told for years that it wasn't. And so, like, it's interesting that this is being brought up now, because it is starting to be looked at that way as well.
Yeah, I mean, the way we describe it in our family is CP is a challenge between the brain communicating with the muscles. And that can be caused by a lot of different things. It can be a birth injury, it can be a mitochondrial disorder, it can be a genetic disorder, it can be caused by brain. You know, many different things can cause it with similar outcomes. So we didn't know Samuel had this disorder until he was 19 years old, just till 5 years ago.
So, and you know, you mentioned, Samuel, that it's rare. I think you should capitalize on that when you're meeting girls. I think you should say to them that you are extremely rare, and you should totally use that to your advantage.
How's that sound, Samuel? Go ahead. Sam said, "How you doing?" That's his line that he's working on from friends.
I'm sure that LeBlanc.
Exactly.
I'm sure that Joey/Matt LeBlanc will be very happy to know that that line is still going around. But I love that we're talking about CP and genetics and all this, because it isn't really discussed enough. And thank you for, you know, being so vulnerable and sharing the diagnoses, because I know that isn't an easy thing to put on a platform like this. So I appreciate that. Okay, let's talk about your amazing film, which the trailer I've watched now 5 or 6 times, because I'm obsessed with it. And I cannot wait to be there with you in person to watch it. Tell me all about The Ride Ahead. Samuel, tell me why you made it, why it's important to you, and all those things.
I've lived in Concord, New Hampshire my whole life, and the schools here are pretty inclusive for students with disabilities. I was in general education classes all the way through school, and I had a lot of friends and was part of clubs and sports. But things felt confusing after I graduated. I wanted to go to college, date, get a job, live on my own. But no one tells you how to be an adult, let alone an adult with a disability. I suggested an idea to my dad, who is a filmmaker. How about I interview badass adults with disabilities about their transition to adulthood? I decided to start by interviewing people I already knew, like Judy Heumann, Bob Williams, and Keith Jones, because they are people I look up to. They are great advocates and role models for kids and young adults with disabilities. I wanted to ask them and other people I admired about their transition to adulthood to help me and others be successful. Success can be defined in many ways. These are just people I wanted to have as mentors. We wanted to focus on people who would be honest and tell it like it is.
And you did like such an incredible job doing that. The Cliffs with Judy Heumann, I got to meet her once, never in person. I got to meet her over the podcast for this. And I just cold reached out to her a couple years ago before her passing. And she immediately was like, sure, no problem. And she's like, can I give you 45 minutes? And I was like, you could give me 2 minutes and I would take whatever I could get. So like the fact that you had her in the film, when I saw that in the clip, I teared up because I was like, wow, this is incredible.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Judy, you know, has been a mentor for both of us for really many years. Like I've known her, I knew her about 15 years. I keep talking about her in the current tense because it's hard to imagine she's gone.
I know.
But she was an incredible influence on both of us. Samuel actually did a film about her in high school, even before this film. And to have 3 hours talking with her was amazing, right, Samuel? And we edited together a half an hour extended interview with her that we're also releasing as part of our educational kit.
Oh, but, fantastic.
I was going to ask Samuel, I mean, we had some pretty big adventures on the road filming that I think you'll appreciate, Samuel. I don't know, and Andrew, do you want to share some of the misadventures we had during our filming process?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Setting up and getting all of the interviews done was the most challenging part of creating the film. We had to fly or drive a long way for the interviews. On our flight to Indianapolis, they turned my power wheelchair on its side both ways, and it got damaged both ways. On our trip to DC, we had a 6-hour flight delay, and then as we were finally boarding our plane, another passenger talked down to me, like I was a 3-year-old.
Ugh.
I wanted to curse at her, but didn't. On our NYC trip, I had a seizure. But we still got the filming done on all the trips.
Well, I'm so glad you got the filming done. And I know from my own experience traveling and doing media stuff, I can't tell you how many times they've turned off my chair or damaged the chair or lost the chair or almost dropped me, getting me into seats and having me so I fully understand that upset of how do I do my job if you break my chair? How do I do my job if my body doesn't cooperate? And so I have traveled all over the world, you know, talking about disability, and people don't realize the amount of hardship it is for both the disabled person but also their care team on top of that to get to a place to do a thing. So when the pandemic hit, as awful as it was in terms of accessibility, I was so happy that Zoom kind of became our mainstay, because then I didn't have to fly anywhere to do anything. And I love traveling and I love doing that, but accessibility with digital stuff is a lot easier.
Yeah, we're getting ready for this Toronto trip in a few days, and we have a list like 3 pages long, right, Samuel, of everything we need to remember to bring on this trip. And sometimes we'll ship stuff in advance, like medical supplies in advance. But since we're driving, we can just pile it all into the van. But it takes a team effort. Samuel and his direct support professionals sometimes spend a couple of days like assembling all the things we need.
Oh, yeah.
And then as we're driving, we do we do the checklist, right? What are the absolute essential things we need to have with us on this trip that we cannot forget? Like all the meds, all the, you know, medical supplies. It's not everyone understands. We try to show that a little bit in the film, but it's just a sliver of what the experience is like for most people that have complex or severe disabilities.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, Dan, because I travel with my mom. Like, do you... And when I travel with her, I love my mom to death, but she gets on my nerves, and I'm sure like you get on Samuel's nerves. What's it like for you as a dad to travel with Samuel and doing all this? Like how, like, you know, you talked a second ago about all the things people don't see. What is it like for you to put that in motion?
I mean, we love traveling together, right, Samuel? We have such a good time traveling. And Betsy often, our, you know, my wife, his mom travels with us, his older brother sometimes, DSPs. We now almost always travel with a direct support professional because, you know, we have, Samuel's got a full-time team of different people and it's wonderful. It makes it more fun. It makes it easier on all of us to have a support person. So that's a big piece. For myself, I just try to control everything that I can control, like bringing all the right equipment, making sure all of our transportation is accessible. You know, we do a lot of paid, you know, speaking gigs and we build in costs for like an accessible van.
Oh, yeah.
The direct support professional, you know, for a room that's a hotel that's in a reasonable ADA. Part of town. You know, yeah. So I all I can say is I do everything I can to control the variables that we can control because you know that shit's going to happen that you can't expect.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then you just roll with that.
Do you, both of you, but do you find, because when I travel, I know I have to get Hoyer lifts to travel. And I'm wondering if that's the same for you.
We that would be kind of cool for other people. I can, right, Samuel, you and I can physically transfer you in and out of bed and onto the toilet and stuff. We have our systems that work for us on the road.
I'm so jealous. I can't anymore.
But nobody else can. It'd be very difficult for anybody else to do that. Not that I'm hugely strong or anything. I'm just used to it over many years and, you know, tall enough to do it.
And I'm only asking because when I travel, like, I have to do a Hoyer lift. And depending on where you're going, you say Hoyer lift and they go, what's that? And you're like, okay, well, great. Like, how am I going to get out of bed? So but I think even in the trailer, you see a sliver of you and Samuel navigating the traveling.
Yep.
And I think that's so valuable because people don't, like you're saying, people don't recognize just how fucking hard it is to get from your place, your comfort zone, to a plane or to, you know, again, what happens when your stuff gets damaged?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think, and part of it is that Samuel loves traveling, right? I mean, Samuel, you're like such a big travel fan and that's a big, important part of your life. So I don't know if you want to just quickly, Samuel, talk about some of the places and some of your dreams for your future, what you want to do.
Yeah, where do you want to go?
I dream about traveling around the country and the world. I want to go to the Football Hall of Fame in Ohio, the Negro Baseball League Hall of Fame in Kansas City, London, and Europe. I also think a lot about having a girlfriend, getting married, maybe having kids, and making more films.
Yeah.
And you should have all those dreams. And it frustrates me that those dreams are valid, those dreams are very real, and you deserve to have them. And we still live in a world in 2024 where, you know, a lot of that's in question because people don't provide access. And so it pisses me off to know that as much as I want to say, yeah, it'll be totally easy. Like, sure, we both know that it's going to be fucking hard, but I commend you. And London is amazing. Paris is incredible. I've been there. I've been there as a severely disabled person. I can tell you that Paris is really accessible. There's cabs that are willing to take you for free. The buses are good. In Paris, the Airbnb that I stayed at in Paris was not great for accessibility, but we made do. London is pretty accessible. They try pretty hard. There's a lot of disabled people that live there. So if you ever get the chance to go there, which after this film premieres, of course you're going there. Of course you will. You'll find it to be pretty, pretty accessible.
That's awesome. That's good to hear. Good to hear from somebody who lived it.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about, so when I watch the film as a disabled person, which I am so excited to do, when I watch it, I'm going to like be bawling in the corner because I understand how important it is. But when you, like, if you were to explain this film to two groups, I think, people with your disabilities and then non-disabled folks, what do you want them to take away from this?
My goal for the film is that people won't talk down to people with disabilities. I want everyone to know that people with disabilities demand respect and rights. And I want other young adults with disabilities to have the same opportunities that I have had for healthcare, inclusive education, college, assistive technology, jobs, making friends, and independent living. I want people to learn from disability role models like Judy Heumann and Bob Williams. I want to help people learn how to live a full life with a disability as they transition to an adult by focusing on all of the possibilities of work, education, and disability rights.
That's so incredible. And I mean, I don't know if you know this, but you are also going to be a disability role model after this film hits the world. I think people seeing this will really take stock of the reality of disability. And that's why I think, like, I've had documentaries done on me too. And I remember how I'm so thankful that you are both living in the disability world, because when I was approached to do my documentary, they weren't, the team had no experience around disability, which was fine and lovely, and that was okay. But this is, I think powerful in a different way, because you live this experience, and you, Dan, as his dad, have lived with him in the experience. So it makes it accessible to a whole bunch of different people in different ways. Disabled people can look at the film and go, there's me, wow, amazing. But non-disabled people can look at the film and go, oh, there's also a version of me in here too. And how do I relate to disability in that way? And I think even just from the trailer that I watched 7 times, like, it's so valuable to have those perspectives. And I'm so excited for it to be in the world, because in 20 years, when somebody else is looking for a podcast to do, they're going to find this film and be like, wow, there's a version of me here. So, like, it may have been a slog to have it made, but it's going to change people's worldviews for sure.
Well, we appreciate that so much, Andrew. And I mean, one thing that I want your listeners to know, and then maybe Samuel can talk about the advisory board after this, because that's important too. But we made a commitment from the very beginning of this project to hire a majority of our production outreach crew be disabled people, that we wanted disabled people to be a majority of our production and outreach crew. And I think what you're saying is because we had a majority disabled crew, there's a lens on this film that is very unique, you know, that people with lived experience who are telling the story, and not just telling the story, but co-producing and writing music and doing the animation and all the different pieces. And then Sam, like, I don't know if you can share a little bit. Also, we had a really important advisory board for the film too, that was extremely informative for both the short film we did that was in the New York Times called My Disability Roadmap, that was an op doc in the New York Times, and also the feature length film.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sam.
We created an advisory board for the new film project. Everyone on the advisory board are young adults with disabilities. Advisory board members gave us awesome feedback on cuts of the film, and they are also giving us input on our educational materials and outreach and publicity campaigns.
That's just necessary. It's not even like say again.
Did you want to say something more about that, Samuel? No, Andrew, I think I had another question for you coming up soon. Go ahead, Andrew. We're taking you in all different directions here, but I hope that's okay.
Of course. I just think that having a disabled advisory board is just the way it should be done, and the way disability film should be made. And we always talk about, and we always see on social media about how, you know, there should be disabled people in the writer's room. There should be disabled people behind the scenes. There should be disabled people doing all this. And the fact that there is, for real, in this film, but also making a film about disability, that's just, unfortunately, it's rare. But with what you're doing and with the reach you'll get from the way that it's been received, like, I have seen your film on my feed before I was even invited. I have seen it from every disability advocate that I know on every platform has been like, oh my God, we're so excited. Like, it's gonna do things to change the narrative that I don't even think that either of you are ready for. Like, it's going to make waves, and that's so important.
Oh, thank you. That's exciting to hear from you. That means a lot.
Okay, let me see which one I want to ask now. Oh yeah, this one. So not only are you about to, be a star, not that you are already a star, but you've won a fucking Emmy. That's amazing. That's groundbreaking. I remember seeing that on my newsfeed before I got to speak with you. And I was, when I saw that first picture of you holding your Emmy, I teared up a little bit because I was like, wow, that's a version of me holding an Emmy. That's really cool. It's groundbreaking. It's a groundbreaking moment for disabled people, but especially severely disabled people. And I remember seeing that and I was so proud. So for you, Samuel, as a disabled person, how did that make you feel? You're an Emmy winner. That's incredible.
Our short film, My Disability Roadmap, which was in the New York Times in May of 2022, won a 2023 National News and Documentary Emmy Award in late September 2023. The award ceremony was in Times Square in New York City, and I was able to give an acceptance speech. It was awesome.
That's amazing.
I just add, Andrew, that we did a little research afterwards. That was quite an incredible couple of days. But Samuel's the first person that we could find, and I'm pretty sure it's true, that's ever given an Emmy acceptance speech with a communication device. Like, I don't think that's happened. And to boot, what happened, Samuel, like 4 hours before the awards ceremony? Do you want to say it or should I? You want me to say it or you got it? Go ahead.
That one.
Oh, you want me to say it? Samuel, usually when we travel, he's so excited he doesn't sleep as well. And when you don't sleep as well, your seizure risk goes up.
Yeah.
So he was exhausted, and then we were in the hotel, and I'm like, oh man, he's gonna have a seizure. He's gonna have a seizure. And of course, he had a seizure at like 3:30 in the afternoon, but you recovered pretty quickly. And then, like, 2 hours later, we jammed you with some coffee and went to the ceremony, and you did your... Wait, go ahead, Samuel. Holy shit about what? Oh, when we won, you mean?
Yeah,
it was funny. You know, we didn't expect to win. I mean, at least I didn't expect to win. Samuel probably did because he's got eternal confidence and confidence. But you know, so we're sitting there and like at the table and with Betsy and one of the DSPs who's great, and they said, you know, the Emmy goes to My Disability Roadmap, and we all just kind of looked at each other like flabbergasted. I was like, shit. And so then Sam and I had to make our way up to the stage, which took maybe 30 seconds as they were showing the clip, and we just kept saying, "Holy shit! Holy shit! Holy shit! Holy shit!" Just again.
Did they make sure there was a ramp? Did they make sure?
There's a whole story about that. We had to work for weeks in communication to create accessibility for that event. There was no ramp to the stage, and they initially were going to put us up in the cheap seats, which were still like $600 a ticket. But they were going to put us up in the cheap seats because we couldn't afford like the $1,000. And the cheap seats involved like two different lifts to get down to the stage. And so they said, well, why don't you, we'll just have you come down to beside the stage, you know, like backstage 20 minutes before the award's announced. And that way, if you win, you can just come out. So suddenly we had a completely different experience. We would have had a completely different experience than anyone else, because they get to like have the moment with their family and and kind of make their way to the stage in front of everybody. But instead we would have had to gone up early. If we lost, we would have like made the walk of shame, you know, back. A roll of shame. But anyway, we, after some negotiations, they comped us tickets in a better area, but everyone else had wine and food on their table, and they didn't give us any wine or food on their table.
Oh, come on.
It was a bit of a disaster, but in the end, it was all worth it for sure.
I mean, because I remember when I went to know, I was nominated for an award for this podcast a couple years ago at a queer event, and they invited me to go. They didn't comp me anything. They said, you want to come? You have to fly out and pay for your stuff. So we said, sure, of course. Like, it's LA. We'll go. That'll be fun. Sure. So I took my mom as my caregiver. And I walked in the room and I knew he didn't win because I didn't see a ramp there. So I was like, obviously I've lost because where's my accessibility? And for something as big as the Emmys, it's like to not consider like what is like why?
Yeah, well, we have our executive producers on this film are Jim Lebrecht and Sarah Boulder, and they were two of the three producers with Nicole Noonan of Crip Camp.
Yeah,
and I bet you know. And Jim particularly has become a huge advocate for accessibility at award shows and other events like that.
So
he's pushing, and we're just trying to support his efforts.
Like I think you know, first of all, and secondly, to have Samuel up there as like the first person with an AAC device to give an acceptance speech. Holy fuck. That's like, I don't think I've ever seen that before. And I hope that it changes the way that we think about speech and the way we think about giving a speech. And like, that's why I love having you on right now, because I've had guests on the show who verbalize different ways. I had a guest once who could type but couldn't speak. And so we spent 3 hours crafting a 30-minute podcast where they would type out what they want to say and I would read it out. And like, so it was a different way of verbalizing. But I think people with AAC devices, like, this is going to change the game for them. This is going to make them like see what you've done and be like, oh, I can be in the Hollywood Reporter. I can be a celebrity. I can just go off to college and have a life. I think it's going to change the game, and the perception of people with AAC is historically so ableist and so wrong. And it's going to make waves in that community. And I'm really excited for that.
I hope so. And I mean, and Samuel has thought a lot about how to coach people on how to be more, create more space for people with disabilities and people with communication disorders. So I don't know, Samuel, if you want to share a few tips on that. I think you've written some really powerful advice on that front.
Be patient and do not talk down to me. Ask me how I best communicate. Slow down the pace of the conversation to create more space for me to contribute. If you don't understand me, ask me to repeat what I said. If I'm typing on my device, don't start another conversation. Please wait for me to finish.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, even me with a little bit of able privilege of being able to verbalize quote unquote normally, which is ridiculous, but being able to verbalize the way that I do, I have to be reminded of this constantly. So I appreciate that, because I'm a fast talker. When I get excited, I talk really fast. So I appreciate all of us just being reminded that people communicate differently. It does not mean they're less than. It doesn't mean they're.
Yeah. And we've had to work on that in our own family, right, Samuel? I mean, we've had people in the family and friends who we've had to coach quite a bit to create more space for Samuel. And they've learned eventually. Sometimes it took some decades, but they've got there.
I know when somebody who verbalizes differently or uses AAC is with a caregiver, they'll default to the caregiver. So, like, when you're doing all this stuff for the film, Dan, how did you... If there's a clip in the trailer that I saw, like, didn't you meet the president? Didn't you meet Joe Biden?
Yeah.
Like, and the clip that I love was when he touched your face and you were like, oh, that's weird. Like, obviously you can't rebuke the president, but how do you, in dealing with people who want to talk to Samuel like he's four, what do you do as his parent when you're in those situations?
Right. Well, I mean, there's things that I do and there's things that Samuel has learned to do, you know. So I'll let in a second Samuel share a few things. But from my point of view, it's been kind of a lifelong challenge, not just for me or for Samuel, but our whole family and his amazing support people, to redirect people to Samuel when they start talking to them and say, well, what does he want to eat or what does he like? It's like, ask Samuel. I can't imagine. I probably said 100,000 times in my life, ask Samuel.
and that
some people get it after like the third or fourth time and some people don't. And then there are times like, right, Samuel, if we go to a doctor's visit and they just want to know your date of birth and name, like I might just say it just to kind of keep things moving along.
Yeah.
So you pick your spots, but I don't know, Samuel, if you have a little bit you want to say about dealing with condescending people and how you react to that these days.
I want to curse at people who talk down to me, like Joe, the woman at the airport, in the film. But I did not because I'm afraid that people would get mad at me. Next time, I will say, talk to me like I'm an adult. I am learning a lot from people with disabilities, that it's not easy to be an adult with a disability. But I'm learning from them how to be a better disability rights advocate for my life, and for other people with disabilities.
You know what? I would say to you, and that's all that's correct, but I would also say to you, Samuel, you can say fuck. You let the AAC thing say fuck. Say fuck off. Let them hear that from the machine, and then all of a sudden they'll know very clearly what you feel about something. I think that's allowed, and I understand your feeling about not wanting them to be mad at you and playing. You kind of have to play roles of, like, the compliant disabled person sometimes to get what your needs are and to have your needs met, and I've had to play that game, and it's really, really hard. But I think every now and then, a good fuck you from your, you know, AAC device, that's a real good reminder that, like, oh, you're still a person.
Yeah, Samuel's got a pretty great cursing page. You just may need to use it more often, Samuel, in that situations.
Amazing. I want to talk about intimacy, because intimacy is something you touch on in the film, one of the many things you touch on. And Samuel, I want to ask you, a lot of us with cerebral palsy and multiple disabilities, and you've said in this interview a couple times now, we want to have relationships and intimacy and dates. What do you think, Sam, some of the challenges are for you in navigating relationships with your various disabilities?
People don't see me as a boyfriend or dating material, and sometimes they don't see me as old enough to have sex. And obviously, that is not true, so that can be frustrating. But even though it can be frustrating, I am still putting myself out there to meet the girl for me. I am on dating apps like Hinge, Bumble, and also Dateability, Ellie and Lola. I'm also going out to places where people my age hang out. Accessibility is definitely an obstacle when it comes to getting into people's homes for parties, or certain bars. But the biggest obstacle is definitely ableism.
Ableism is the biggest obstacle, and I said, I'm 40 now, and I've gone on a handful of dates in my life because of the ableism that I've experienced. And so I know how hard it is to, you know, and when I was 24, when I was your age, which feels like a millennia ago now, but when I was your age, you know, there was that hope, that spark that eventually the ableism from other people would grow up a little bit. So my hope is that because you're from a slightly younger generation than I am, that hopefully the ableism will dissipate, and you know, and with this film being so kind of on the scene, the hope is that, like, pretty girls will come to the screenings and, like, realize you're down to date. Exactly. And so I think that, but it's tough trying to date and realizing not only that you want a date, but also that your body can't do certain things that everybody else can do. And so I can speak from my experience. It's frustrating. It's really, really hard. But I think... I think that if you teach the pretty girls about ableism and about all that stuff, give them a chance to learn while getting to know you. Like, that's what you gotta do.
And I'll just add that I think Samuel, like, we can only support Samuel so much in this journey. And I know, Sam, what's a huge goal for you to start dating and become sexually active and have relationships. Have people you can be partners with and love and spend time with and have intimacy with. I think your best the people that you're going to learn the most from are people like Andrew and Keith Jones and Judy Human and Allie and other disabled people who have navigated this. It's the most powerful. In addition to people your own age, like some of your DSPs who just know stuff about dating, you know, and but not your parents. We are not the ones that are going to help you come through on this front.
And like, I'm sure you as his dad, Dan, you don't want to be a part of that. You want to let him, obviously.
Yeah, I don't mind. I mean, we're really open around sexuality in our family and talking about it, like with both our kids, I've always been. But I just, there's only so much we can do as parents.
Of course.
8-year-old parents, you know. Mm. One thing to be open, it's another thing to really know.
Invade the space.
A 24-year-old disabled man. I don't know that.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you from my experience dating, like I said, I'm 40 and I've only gone a handful of dates. I want for you to meet somebody and I want for you to have those experiences. I really do. But I'll say like, if that doesn't happen right away, it doesn't make you less than, it doesn't make you less deserving. It doesn't mean that it won't happen. But if you end up, you know, 35 and not dating because of all this stuff, like I kind of had to come to that realization for my own self. Like, I don't have what I thought I would have at 40. When I was your age, I thought at 40, oh yeah, I'll have a boyfriend. I'll be, you know, in a house. I'll have a job. A lot of those things didn't materialize the way that I wanted it to. And I'm learning that that's okay. And I'm learning that it's not going to look the way we see it on dating shows or TV shows or movies. It's going to be a little bit different. So if it doesn't materialize the way the dream is in your head, that sucks, I know, because I've been there myself. But I'm here to tell you that that's all right, too.
What do you think, Samuel? Coming to terms with that concept, it's a big one. That's a really, really well said, I think. But it's hard, perhaps, to process that in a way, Samuel, too.
Yeah, 24-year-old me would be like, fuck off. I'm going to find all the girls. I'll be just fine.
Samuel, just so you know, Andrew, when Samuel looks up like he is, I know your listeners won't be able to see that because they're just listening, but Samuel, when he looks up, it's deep thought. It's like really processing and thinking.
Oh, well, that's awesome. I'm glad that I've given you some stuff to have deep thoughts about. I love deep, my deep thoughts are my favorite thoughts, as evidenced by my fun social media tweets. This was so fun and so such a pleasure to sit down with you both. I'm so excited to be there. The film is premiering in Toronto, where I'm recording right now. Toronto on, actually, do you want to tell us when it is?
Yeah, for sure. So we're part of the Hot Docs Film Festival, which is an amazing international documentary film festival. And we're going to be at both April 28th and April 30th of this year, 2024, Sunday and Tuesday at the TIFF Lightbox Theater. And the best way to learn all about the film, watch the trailer, buy tickets, is to go to our website, which is rideaheadfilm.com. So RIDE, like ride, rideaheadfilm.com. And then we have, you know, Facebook, Instagram, X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it these days.
Yeah, who knows?
And YouTube. We've got it all out there, but the website is a good place to start. And we really want to pack the house. And we want to see tons of disabled people joining us there and partying with us. So please, if you're in Toronto, come to the show and meet us and say hi and watch what will be a very entertaining movie. I promise. A lot of humor too.
Please come. I will be there on Tuesday, April 30th. I've already booked my transit there. I booked it this morning. So if you want to meet like Samuel and Dan and the whole crew and, you know, some cool disabled Torontonians, I will be there. This is such an important film. It's the kind of disability film I think that we've all been waiting for. Those of us living with severe disabilities. I don't often see versions of myself on screen like that. And again, I've only seen the trailer like 9 times, but in what I've seen, I see versions of myself in there. And both of you should be very proud.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Really, that means a lot. And we so appreciate this time with you. And Sam, why don't you have something you want to say in closing?
It was great to be with you today. Thanks so much for your questions. We'll keep you posted on the ride ahead.
Oh, for sure you will, because I'm going to be there. So I'm so excited. Thank you so much for it. I cannot wait. I'm so excited. It's like meeting. I feel a bit starstruck right now. I can't wait. What a brilliantly fantastic interview that was. I adore Samuel and Dan Habib for bringing us on this journey. I'm so excited for their film. They deserve every single accolade they get. And again, if you're in Toronto, please come on Sunday, April 28th at 2:30 p.m. or Tuesday, April 30th at 1:45 p.m. to the TIFF Bell Lightbox. I will put the promo code for 20% off two tickets in the show notes of the podcast. It'll be there. Please come. This is a crucial, crucial film. This is required learning, folks. We need to be watching and supporting disability film like this. And it is my absolute honor to be one small voice championing this film. I am so excited to be there, and I hope you will join me if you're in Toronto. If you want to find out more about the film, go to rideaheadfilm.com. Samuel and Dan are just such an amazing, important father and son duo, making films like this, and I am just in awe of what they've created, and I'm so excited to. I haven't even seen the film yet. I've only seen the trailer like a bunch of times, but it is incredible, and I cannot wait to be there. And so if you're in Toronto, please come. Enough of my rambling, but here's the regular outro. Thanks, and hopefully we'll see you there. Bye, friends. All right, friends. Well, there goes another episode of Disability After Dark, the podcast shining a bright light on disability stories with me, your host, Andrew Gerza. If you want to follow my work, you can head over to my social media, AndrewGerza6 on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, although I never use it. If you want to follow my website and find out about my speaking opportunities, my gigs, and ways to have me come to your event, go to www.andrewgerza.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/disabilityafterdark, and you can get the show days early, completely ad-free, and a shout-out on the air. So if you want to support the show, you're able to do that. And please, please, leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. It really does help shows like this about disability, which are very rare, get supported. Thank you so much for being with us, and stay comfy, cozy, and crippled. Until next time, bye! Copyright notice. Disability After Dark was created, recorded, and produced by Cripple & Co. Productions and Andrew Gerza. Any and all use of materials, graphics, audio recordings, etc. cannot be used or distributed without express permission. If you would like to use an episode of the podcast or license an episode of the podcast on your website, please consider emailing Andrew Gerza and Cripple & Co. Productions at disabilityafterdarkpod@gmail.com. Copyright 2024.